Hey, what's up, you guys, and welcome to
Knockout Love.
All right, today we are going to jump into our first topic, which is Oakland Raiders not in Oakland anymore. So Oakland Raiders are moving to Vegas in the next 2 years. Your reaction?
Man, I feel bad for the Oakland fan base. I mean, Oakland is such a historic NFL team. They've been around for a while, and they created such a fan base that stretches along the East Coast, West Coast. Personally, if I was a diehard Raiders fan, I wouldn't go to a Raiders game in the next 2 years in the current Raiders stadium. I'll make them pay for these next 2 years, and with the loss of income and loss of revenue that they're going to have to suffer for.
But would you watch when it goes to Vegas if you were a Raiders fan?
I wouldn't go.
So you wouldn't be a Raiders fan anymore then?
No, I wouldn't be. And I definitely want to be a Raiders fan for the next 2 years while they're still in Oakland.
So you'd be definitely cheering against your old fans.
Of course.
Do you think that that's happening a lot? I feel, for one, that the fans are definitely going to be on edge the next 2 years because they may be... There's talks of interim facilities, then possibly be in Texas the following year, and then making the transition to Vegas. I think it's going to hurt the players even more than it's going to hurt the fan base.
Well, the fans are always going to bandwagon. That's just the nature of it. When LeBron went to the Heat, they received an influx amount of fans from all over the country and all over the world.
They had superstars on their team already,
though. Superstars on their team, and then Miami is just a hot spot. You know, everyone wants to go to Miami for vacation. It seems like a paradise location.
See, but Oakland's in California. That's a vacation spot.
No, Oakland is really not a vacation spot compared to Vegas.
Vegas is not somewhere I'm taking my family to see a football game.
Why not? I mean, people go to Vegas all the time. They plan for Vegas trips.
Everyone but with your family, there's just so much temptation.
People always say that they have to plan a Vegas trip at least once in their lifetime. They have to plan a Miami trip once in their lifetime. They have to plan a cruise once in their lifetime. So they're definitely going to get the revenue once they go to Vegas. I'm not worried about the NFL making money. Obviously, I wouldn't be worried about the NFL making money. That's the only reason why they made that move. They made that move because they're going to bring in revenue.
I think it's really going to hurt their players.
I don't think it's going to hurt their players as much as people think that it's going to hurt their players. I just feel more pain for the diehard Raiders fans that have been Oakland Raiders fans, I should start saying. Oakland Raiders fans that have stood by their team through the good, through the bad, the past 10 years. And this year looked very promising with Derek Carr, and now they're just relocating.
But to my point, if you're an Oakland Raiders fan right now, you love the team, you love the aspect of the players and the work that they're putting in, as well as the coaches that have shaped this team. Why would you not continue to be a fan?
Because you're selling out. Because you're selling out.
How are you selling out if you're staying with the same team, following the same athletes?
It's just like when the Baltimore Colts became the Indianapolis Colts. All right, until the Baltimore Ravens came in town, you know, the people that were Baltimore Colts fans weren't Indianapolis Colts fans. That's just how it works. You feel attachment to your location. Even if you're an Oakland Raiders fan and you live in Florida, you have some type of special ties to the name Oakland Raiders. You don't have a special tie to the name Raiders. You have a tie to Oakland Raiders. And it just stays with you as a stigma. When you change the location before the team name, it changes the ballgame. It's not the same team. People always think, well, let's just say you moved the New England Patriots to the Miami Patriots.
You're going
to
bring your favorite team.
Of course I'm going to bring my favorite team. I'm not going to feel the same way as I do as the Patriots. One, I lived in Massachusetts, but let's just say I didn't live in Massachusetts, all right?
Say it was just your favorite team.
Just my favorite team. There is a special reason why they're my favorite team.
So, like, I bandwagoned onto the Patriots because I date you, and that's the closest following I've had with football. So, I have a passion for the New England Patriots now. So, that's one way you can look at it.
Kinda, but it was back to my point. If you were going to move it to the Miami Patriots,
see, it's not going to feel the same. To it. You would, because you have ties to New England. But right, me just liking players, like, I love Julian Edelman. Like,
Rob Gronkowski. But you're not a diehard fan.
I'm not a diehard fan. That's true.
I'm talking to the diehard fans.
But I truly appreciate players.
But I'm talking to the diehard fans.
That love the concept of the franchise.
Exactly.
Okay.
This isn't about the ones that bandwagon. This is about the ones that have stuck it through the good and the bad. You know, the ones that saw the Raiders finally see a light in the tunnel this year with Derek Carr, and then have an unfortunate situation happen in the last game of the season where he tore his fibula. But
Broke his fibula.
But the fan base still had hope for next year. And then you get the news in the offseason that they're going to relocate to Las Vegas. It's a slap in the face.
And maybe I'm looking at it wrong. Like, I am truly concerned about the players. I'm concerned about rookies
coming
in. I'm
just
going to
be honest. You don't have a team that you're a diehard fan for.
I understand. So I'm just going to look at it from my perspective. I'm concerned for the rookie players coming in. They're going to be exposed to the Vegas lifestyle.
Well, that's a whole nother story. The Vegas lifestyle, you can say the same thing about Miami. You can say the same thing about New York. But you don't realize when teams go to New York, there's so many distractions in New York. I've been in New York 2 times now, and the nightlife there is ridiculous, okay? All right? So, and I'm not making millions of dollars. So imagine those people that are making millions of dollars going to New York. And there are 2 New York teams in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, there are 2 New York NBA teams, okay? There are several New York baseball teams. And then you have a fan base in LA, or let's just say California, where there's several teams in California.
Yeah.
And the nightlife in California is ridiculous in a good way. So what's the difference with Las Vegas?
Because
gambling is less strict. Okay.
Yeah, it's not as hard. Like, you have to seek gambling when you go to these other cities. But Vegas is known for, it's a city of sins. Like, they literally call it Sin City. So, you're exposing people who are basically coming out of the draft, 21, they're fresh, they're getting all these money for these contracts. They're like, hey, I'm going to spend this.
These professional players, and it's also up to the owner, it's up to the coach, of course, it's up to the GM to set protocols in place where you know for sure that these rookies, you should say, are doing the right thing.
And I hope that they would offer forms of, like, counseling or special awareness going into these cities.
See, this is what I don't get about the world nowadays. Everyone wants to give so much support for these guys that are making millions of dollars. They have these fortunate abilities to play a sport that's
such a high demand. They're blessed to play a sport.
And then we want to feel sorry for them when they make a mistake.
I feel sorry for anyone that has an addiction.
No, it's not an addiction. What you're saying is an addiction. What you're saying is someone coming out of college being exposed to these bright lights and this Vegas lifestyle because they got drafted to the Raiders, and you think because they're young and fresh out of college that they're going to make mistakes and we should feel sorry for them. No. You're given the opportunity. You have the responsibility with your blessed abilities to play in the National Football League to take care of yourself. Why should we feel sorry for them? Why should we give them a free pass just because they're young? They're not young. They're grown men.
It doesn't just have to be grown men, though.
All right, especially if they're not rookies, they should definitely know if they're professionals already that we shouldn't have to give them a free pass.
But so we're gonna say we're not gonna give them free passes. But if you look at the course of the NFL and the amount of incidents that have gone, let's not use gambling. Let's say drugs. The amount of drug use that people are. So marijuana is an illegal substance for NFL players. Well, we have some players continuing to test positive over and over again, and they keep giving second chances. And so, yes, that's affecting their bodies, and it's selfish against the team. You can use the same thing using gambling. And that's only one part of Vegas. There's drugs, there's the idea of, like, women, there's just the entertainment value in Vegas.
But it brings me back to my point. Why are we feeling sorry for these people?
Because we're exposing them.
How? How are we exposing them?
We are literally taking them out of the structured, more supervised forms of the NCAA and then dropping them into a city.
Oh, so there isn't marijuana in colleges? There isn't there aren't gambling that goes on in college.
So your name is on your back in college. No. Your name is on your back in college, and people are starting to know you. But when you hit the NFL, you've been drafted. Your name's been all over TV. People have been covering your life. People are going to seek that in you now because they want a reaction.
I don't think that's true. I think we just like giving people breaks. It's just the American dream concept, you know. We build people up, and then if they fall, we want to correct it. I mean, we want to make an example out of people. Why little kids shouldn't do this? He had everything in the world, and then they did this. And then we have another side of people, other group of people that want to, want to bash these players. And you got to pick and choose, because we can't feel sorry for them, but we got to give them support at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But where do we find a happy medium where we're not so passive, okay? Because what you're saying is too passive. We're giving them a break. They're professional players. Their job is to play football.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they have a responsibility.
It's their 9 to 5.
It's their responsibility to hold up to the expectations of their job.
And if they don't meet it, they should be cut.
They should be cut, exactly.
No, you're all right.
There are millions of people out there that wish they're in their situation and be playing on a professional team. Why should we give them a break? There isn't a reason to give them a break. But we have the side of society that would love to cut people breaks. No, I think that's right. Because they're making millions of dollars, they have the opportunity to make a boatload of money. At the same time, all they have to do is just play the game that they've been playing all their lives and just staying a good citizen, abiding by the rules.
In your opinion, who do you think should pay on the first date?
You know what? It should be a 50-50 split.
Going Dutch.
Let me tell you why it should be a 50-50. All right? It's an investment. That's how I look at everything in life. It's an investment, okay? Your time is your money, right? Obviously, you have interest in this lady, or if it's a male. You want to make sure that there's a future in it, okay? But you always got to plan for the worst. If she has expensive taste, and you spend over $100 on a date, that's $100 out of your pocket.
Damn.
You know what I mean?
She's expensive. $100 on a first date? Where'd you guys go?
Well, you gotta remember too, your time is your money. Mm-hmm. So it may not be $100 that you see on your receipts when you add them all up at the end of the night. But really, if you think about it,
You could be making $100 in the time period of you eating.
And maybe not. Maybe if it's not $100, maybe it's just, a couple, dollars here and there on top of the meal, on top of wherever you took her, if it was a movie, if it was a bowling, mini golf, wherever, Those things add up, especially when time gets involved. People really undermine the value of time. And I think that's something we should talk about as well. But to get me back to my point, you got to look at the first day as an investment. Okay, it can go really bad, it can go really well. It's never in between. Either you're going to hit it off, or you guys are going to, do the run around each other, and then eventually it's just going to fade off. Right? Would you agree?
I agree. You can be lukewarm. You either know, you're going to want another date, or you're not meant to be with this person. It's awkward.
So, if you're going to do that, why would you pay all of it? Why not do half and half?
All right,
because at least you protect your assets, you protect your interests, and also it's kind of like buying liability insurance. Because at the end of the day, you look at it this way, right?
Hold on, hear me out. I don't know you anything. You don't know me anything.
Exactly,
right?
So if it goes terribly wrong, all right. So instead of spending $100, you spend $50. Spending $100. Would you agree?
All right. Okay.
And it builds common ground. You understand each other. You understand where you are, And if it goes really, really well, you're not going to mind paying an extra $100 the next time you go out and paying for everything. But, like people always say, you know more about what you're going to get out of somebody from the first time you meet them. And I think that is true. You may not get the clear picture, but you get that feeling. And I think feelings go a long way.
I think on the first date, when that black checkbook comes out and it's placed on the table and they put it right in between because they don't know, or even worse, they put it right in the hands of the guy, and you look across and you think, oh God, what's going to happen? I think I'm the person that normally reaches for the check, and I've always been that way because I've just been taught not to accept things. I think that's just how I grew up. But there's always like that hit me that's like, I wonder if they're going to offer to pay. And I mean, I haven't been on a date, like a first date in a while, but I would expect to pay, but I would love to hear the person offer to pay. But in my mind, I like to think that,
well, you're a female, every female wants that hope.
Yeah. But I think I'm different in the sense that I'm one to reach for the bill. Because I don't want someone to have something over me. Because I don't like the idea. I let you talk. I don't like the idea of them saying, oh, I bought you dinner, so where is this going next? Or you have to come see me again because, you know, I gave you dinner. Like, I don't like the idea of, I like the idea that you said about kind of the liability. Where
I'm not even liking this girl, and you really weren't that sure after the first date. But let's say she was really, really beautiful, and all you were doing was just thinking what you're, you know what? Now, you're not really thinking about what you're spending. You're not really thinking about your time. You're letting your investment become very, very weary and blinded because of her looks. All right? Now you're not thinking straight. And then it turns out a week later or 2 weeks later, man, I really don't like this girl. But I already dumped so much money into this girl. Now you're all out of that money. You're all out of that time. You could have been putting that time towards someone else. You could have ended it on the first date. Spent the next day on someone else that you may have liked better. And people don't understand that. They don't understand the value of time. They don't understand the value of money. And I think we don't put too much thought into the first date. I think we would just wing it. And when you wing it, sometimes you kind of set yourself up for failure. And I think that's why divorce rates are so high. Because once you get locked in, you're kind of locked in. You kind of just let things flow. And then when you let things flow, you're like, oh, damn, I got a baby already. Oh, damn, we just moved in a new house together. Oh, we have a mortgage now. Oh, before you know it, our 5-year-old is going through school. And it's like, whoa, where did I get? How did I get here? And then turns out you don't even like the person.
All because you paid for their food?
That's how it starts.
That's how it starts?
It's got to start somewhere. Maybe that's too deep. Maybe I just think too deep. Or maybe I'm just looking at the statistical facts of divorces and how the rates have been increasing in the U.S. And it makes you think otherwise.
So off of the whole first date man, women kind of stereotypes, are you the person that, I mean, I can answer this, but because you still do it. You hold the door for me. And it's something that I no one's ever done before for me, that they hold the door open for me. And I don't know if it's a courtesy thing just for
like
you.
Like I said, time is money, right? If I hold a door for you, you're going to get through the door a lot faster.
Oh, gosh, stop. But, I mean,
but for real, yeah, I get what you're going with that. I mean, it is a courtesy thing. And I think it is important for the male to still keep their gentleman likes throughout the entire relationship.
And I was saying, we've been dating for 2.5 years. Do you think there's ever a time where it's okay for that stuff to end? Like the door opening, just like the little gestures of courtesy. It doesn't have to be like the over the top gestures, but like the little things. And I think that when those things start to end, those are the warning signs that there's not respect anymore.
Hell no, I don't think that. I think the guy's just done trying to impress you. He gave everything he got.
You should never stop trying to impress the person, though.
Yeah, I hear that, but
you should be surprising the person, impressing them, being the best that you can be
with
the person.
Who said surprising and impressing are synonymous? They're not.
They're not. No. No words are synonymous. I've told you that before.
You can surprise someone and not have to impress them. Right?
Yeah.
So you can still do surprises, but you don't really have to impress someone. All right, you don't have to go over the top, but
surprises don't have to be over the
exactly.
top.
Exactly. So they're not the same thing. So you shouldn't lump them in the same sentence. I feel like that's what you're doing. listen, if you're with someone for a long time and you realize that the person isn't doing what they used to do, don't get frustrated.
I think you should call them out on it, though.
I don't think so.
And then you just let it start, you let that slip, and then other things start
slipping.
I think
slipping. You should put pressure on each other to want to improve one another. I think you should do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should be honest.
I think you should do that. Honesty is key.
But, I don't know, I'm a guy that likes surprises. I like giving out surprises. But always trying to impress. I mean, it's good to impress. But I wouldn't kill yourself over if you've been in a relationship for a while. But I think the surprises are what keeps it going, you know. And I think people try to lump impressing and surprising into one thing, and I don't think it is. You need to, in a way, be your own and continue to be your own while still holding the identity that brought you to that one person, or at least that one person was attracted to you by. I think that's the important thing. No matter how many years you've been together. In real news today, guys, United Airlines has a video that's spiraling out of control. I think most Americans have seen the video. Most people in the world have probably seen the video by now. We just want to, you know, speak a little bit about that. I know maybe a sensitive topic for most.
The video shows a passenger being removed from the airplane after United Airlines was looking for 3 volunteers to leave the overbooked flight. After no volunteer showed, they decided to pick a passenger at random. The passenger was a physician who had to see his patients the next day and really needed to stay on the flight, which he clearly expressed in the second video that came up, which was of him stating that he had patients to see and it was important medical reasons on why he needed to stay on the plane. The second video, which was the first one that was actually shown and spread nationally, was of the passenger being drugged by his clothes, and he was bloodied in the face out of the plane by security. Looking at the video and having flown so much in my life, I am kind of out of words with it, in the sense that I couldn't imagine such a major airline basically invading the rights of someone who paid for their ticket.
What's crazy to me about this video is the fact that the guy with the authority, well, right now he has authority to do this or not, it's still to be left a question. The guy that's pulling the guy out of his, you know, his seat, knew he was being recorded. Because there was obviously dialogue going on before physical action came into play. And the fact that the guy knew that he was being recorded and he still decided to do that, it makes you wonder. It feels like we're always catching things on camera going bad. And these people know they're on camera, but they still decide to do it, knowing that they're putting their jobs in jeopardy, knowing that there's going to be controversy. And it just makes you wonder, is it on purpose?
I also want to think, what would they do if there wasn't a camera rolling? Would it be even worse?
Or would it not be worse? Is technology becoming a canvas for people to just show themselves out, put themselves on the news? Has it become a platform for people to express how they feel about a certain kind of culture?
And what is interesting in the video is that, and the entire story, is that the passenger was randomly selected. If you look in the video, he is of what I would believe Asian descent. So he's foreign. His English isn't 100% perfect in the video, where he's trying to speak to the security guard and kind of, you know, rationalize with him. And the passengers surrounding him are predominantly white. I'm just curious as to how they randomly selected him to be, quote unquote, the volunteer off of the plane.
Or maybe he was a foreigner. probably doesn't speak that much English. He thought it would be an easy one to just target to get off the plane. Or maybe when he realized that it was becoming more of an issue and more people were starting to pay attention, more people were getting the cameras out, maybe the guy wanted to turn into a scene. Now, who knows what's going to happen to this guy? Well, who knows what kind of legal repercussions are going to be posted upon him? But at this point, it just leaves you to wonder. It seems that a lot of things are being caught on camera that are borderline illegal or are illegal. Racial profiling. And it seems to be giving people more fuel to just, I guess I should say, act on camera. And is this our future with technology? Is this our future with social media? I mean, that's one of the reasons why I personally got off social media. It seems that people were just doing things on purpose just to be on camera. I mean, you see all the time police officers, they know they're on camera. They even say when they come up to, when you pull somebody over and they go up to the window, they're like, oh yeah, I see you recording me. It's like egging them on. Like they like it. I mean, what is our world coming to? You're dragging someone out of a seat? It's just crazy to me, but I don't know.
I'm curious as to, most of the time when flights are overbooked, there is financial compensation for the volunteers who offer themselves up to take a later flight, depending on if it's later that day or another day or if it's through an alternate route. My concern with this situation, or I guess my kind of thought behind the security guards, is when they started to ask people or tell people that they were going to be off of the flight, if they had told him, like, if he told them no, and people around him heard them say, oh, like, you can't go, like, that's fine, and then they went and asked the person next to them, would that be the same reaction, and would they then not get someone off of the flight when they needed to? My other thought is, why are we overbooking so many flights? Like, so many flights. The past two flights that you and I went on in California were overbooked.
There's too many travel agencies online, and it brings me back to what I said earlier about the internet and social media and just the way of the future. We got to find a way to control the internet. We got to find a way to mediate people's intentions when cameras are in front of them. I mean, the officer easily could have just asked the next guy and so on and so forth. And then when you go all the way through the entire plane, you find that no one wants to give up their seat.
Then what?
You know? But then you offer a bigger incentive. But you don't forcefully pull someone out of a seat that they pay for.
Yeah, no, I'm not questioning that at all. That's completely wrong in my eyes. Everyone paid for their seat.
And maybe they already went through a whole round and asked for volunteers. And that's probably what happened. They asked a round of volunteers out loud.
Yeah, that's what was said. They asked for three volunteers.
And then no one stood up, and then you go individually. You talk to them like a person. You say, listen, man, is there a way you can possibly move this? Are your priorities as pressing as the person next to you who needs to go see a patient? Now you become more personable. And it brings me into my talk about technology. Everything is so fast, 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 but people forget that there are still humans living on this earth.
Yeah, the face-to-face communication is something that social media hasn't been able to harness a deeper connection. I don't think it ever will. I believe that it's something that social media is something we can't ignore because it's encompassing how we get news. It's encompassing how we live our lifestyles. But the face-to-face communication means so much more, and it's more of a rarity now, which is sad to say, but it holds a higher impact. So I agree with what you're saying, that people are putting on a facade for cameras, especially, I feel, authority. And you used a perfect example with police and how we're seeing a rise in police brutality, as well as just how their figures are handling civilian life and
I wouldn't say a rise, I would just say a reoccurrence of police brutality.
Or brought back into light. Because it could have, yeah, you're right.
But I don't know. It's interesting with a whole new day and age. But I don't know. If I was the officer, I know for sure I would have been able to get three people off that plane.
Through communication.
Through just simple communication and customer service.
There's no need to lay hands on anyone. And forcefully removing someone from a plane just causes a hostile environment for that entire flight. If there was children on that flight, or just in general, I wouldn't feel comfortable flying with United Airlines, knowing that that could be something that could happen to me on any plane.
Speaking of traveling, I hope to do some traveling this next 2 months because NBA playoffs are starting this Saturday. This honestly is my favorite time of year, not only because of NBA playoffs, but because the sun is coming out more, it's staying out longer, we're getting into 70 degrees, 80 degrees, nice nights, cool breezes. I just love this time of year, right before, summer starts off and you're able to start planning your vacations and bringing it into reality. I think NBA playoffs just can't start any better time of the year. I love it. I love it more than NFL playoffs. And it truly is something I look forward to every year. This is my March Madness.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to hopefully my Celtics locking up that one seed. And I hope for the best for them. And hopefully I can go to one of the games, maybe two. What do you got to say about NBA playoffs starting this Saturday, Russ?
I am stoked. Last year was really fun going through, all the series. And, we had people over. We're grilling. You're right. It is, the perfect time of year. I'm excited to finally find out who is going to be the NBA's MVP.
And we're going to discuss that the next time on
Knockout Love.